Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another live episode of the Butterfly Evolution Show. We want to thank you all for tuning in to another episode. We're excited about tonight's show. We get to ask many questions that some of you have presented, and some of our own as well. So we're excited. If you did not get a chance to send a question and you'd still like to, please feel free to do so. For those of you who are Facebook friends, feel free to send me something on Facebook. For those of you who have my cell number, please feel free to submit your question there as well, or an answer to a question if you're not really comfortable with presenting it. And please do share if you want me to give your name on the air as well, as noting that the question is from you or the comment is from you. So we're very excited about tonight's show. Tika, you are online with us, correct?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. All right, so we're just going to move right along. I do want to remind everyone just a few housekeeping things before we move forward. Please remember, I hate to even put this out there, but we just have to do it. If I'm ever disconnected, Tika's on, and we'll just carry on, and same vice versa. If Tika's disconnected, I will carry on. So we just want you to hang tight if that ever happens. If you are listening online, remember, you do have to be a registered follower of the show in order for us to see your comment, for you to chat with us. So that being said, I'm going to go ahead and open up the chat line. If you've not registered, if you're not a follower of the show at this time, you can do that now, or you can just simply listen online and use the call-in number for tonight, and you can always register later. The call-in number is 818-691-7406. Again, 818-691-7406. If you have a question or a comment and you're listening by the phone or by phone, just select the number 1 at any time during the show, and that will notify us here. And the way we will pull you in is I will identify your area code from the number you're calling from, the number that you're using to call in to listen to the show. I'll give you your area code and the last 4 digits of your number that you're calling from. You can either choose to say who you are and where you're calling from, or you can simply just say that you'd like to post your question or your comment. So, again, tonight is just simply about some questions, and I'm going to start out with I have a few, and Tika has some as well, but I'm going to start with one of my latest questions that I received from one of our faithful listeners, and I'm going to state it just as he said it, and then I want to, of course, I'm going to give my answer to it or my thoughts on it, and Tika will, and then we want to open each and every question up to you all. So if you do have a question or a comment about any questions that we ask, please jump in tonight. We've had a few instances the last 2 shows that some people had mentioned that they had selected the number 1, and for whatever reason it did not show, some of them anyway, did not show on our end. If that does happen, every now and then I'm going to check the board, and if I'm saying that there's nothing or no one that has a comment or question, please, maybe you want to just, something's going wrong, maybe you want to just hang up and call back in and reselect the number 1 if I don't identify that we have someone holding in queue. And what I will do tonight, for instance, we have 817 area code, we have 770 area code, of course the 901, we have 910. What I'll do is I'll just say, and we have 615-206 as well. So what I'll do is just say, you know, we have people online from this area, but no one has selected the number to talk. So that'll kind of let you know that we don't see you here, see any indication here that you're wanting to speak tonight. So if that happens, For whatever reason, some things we just don't have any control over. Not sure why that's happening, but we've checked everything out on our end, and no issues that we are aware of or that we can determine. So if that happens, please just hang up and call in and reselect the number one. But this is the question that we're going to start with. And, again, we have some good ones, and hopefully you all have some good ones as well. But is it possible to love like you've never been hurt? And the listener said, real world, none of that Dr. Phil mess. And that's exactly as it came over. So, again, is it possible to love like you've never been hurt? Real world answer, none of the Dr. Phil stuff. And my answer was yes, or my answer is yes. I think it is. I just think it's work, and you have to commit to loving the person that you like and liking that person enough to let go, which we've talked about the last two series, let go of the previous person, the previous hurt, the previous pain. That is hard to do, but it is, I believe it's possible. It just takes work, and you have to constantly remind yourself that this is not my thought process on this. Is this is not that person. This is not that situation. This is not us. This is not the us before, so to speak. So that's my answer. I'm always seeing that sign, love like you've never been hurt before, dance like no one's looking, and sing like no one's listening, I think is how that reads. So I think it is possible. I think it takes work and time and a commitment from both people. And also you have to make sure that the person that you love loves you back. Sometimes it's not possible if it's not a mutual feeling, and not saying that two people get there at the same time ever, but there comes a time when one person has to say, okay, I'm in this alone and it's time for me to go, because I think then it becomes almost impossible to love regardless if you've been hurt or not. So that's my answer to that, and I hope that some of you see that we have some people that just came in, so I want to just quickly repeat that question so that in fairness, they will have time to answer as well or to think about it. And the first question was for those of you who just came in, is it possible to love like you've never been hurt? And this person said, real world, none of that Dr. Phil mess. So is it possible to love like you've never been hurt? The lines are open if anybody wants to jump in and disagree or add to what I've said or share something that has not been said. The lines are open. Pika, do you want to shot at that one?
Actually, just feeding on what you stated, you know, there has to be a common mutual agreement between the two. I think, you know, being on one accord is everything that the word has shared. And, you know, no matter what, you have to be able to respect one another. And so I do believe that, you know, love is, it is really real. Love is real. But a lot of times we just wind up, and that winds up being in one of the questions that I have for tonight, but if we wind up not really listening to our hearts when our hearts may be telling us, or not really listening to our gut feeling when our gut feeling may be telling us that this is not it, and we try to force the issue or make it happen when it doesn't. And so it is definitely a possibility with love and respect, and with you having to be on one accord, meaning that this is right for both parties.
Okay.
It's right for both parties to, you know, get into a mutual union. And like Timmy says, it has to be something that both people want. You know, one can't really be ready for a committed relationship, and then the other one is just, you know, having the feeling that this is just not a good time for them. You know, it has to be mutual on every level. And I think that's why so many, you know, relationships fail. It's because it's, you know, it doesn't start on the right type of common ground that it should.
I think also, too, to add to that, I think we're so afraid. I think people seem to be so afraid to be the only one, I shouldn't say the only one, but to be the one that feels the love first. And then when they do feel it, they're they're almost afraid to share it. Well, I'm going to wait on you, so it becomes this waiting game where I'm going to wait. I found an article that I was going to share with you, but it was for a different question that kind of ties into this because it's the question, what does a thin line, what does it mean when people say it's a thin line between love and hate? And does love really hurt? Like, I've heard people, so I wanted to share that article with those two questions, but I think so often, you know, we're afraid of being hurt, and so we set up these barriers and these boundaries before love has a chance to even manifest itself. We're already saying it's not going to work, it won't work. Mm-hmm. You're going to be just like he was, or you're going to be just like she was, so we go into it with these boundaries and these expectations that it's not going to work, and someone can say or do the most simplest thing and you are right back where you left off in the previous relationship. So don't be afraid. Really, I think it's a good thing to love like you've never been hurt. I've said this a lot in this past month. I think when you do that and it's time to go, you can really go, because you should feel like, it should help you feel like, I gave it my all. There's nothing else I have to give this person, because I diminished whatever I had for this relationship, for this love. I gave it all, and it was not enough, so there's nothing else to give. I think we sometimes stay so long, and I could say that for me in a lot of cases, where you stay so long because you know you did not freely love, you did not freely give, you did not unconditionally love, and so forth. So I think it's beneficial in many ways. It kind of sets you free to do it without expectation. So I'll leave that there. But lines are open if you all want to get in. I see that we had someone else pop in. We were just expressing, is it possible to love like you've never been hurt? And the person did not want any Dr. Phil stuff. He wanted some real talk. So that was our first question. And we're going to move on to some other questions. But if you think about this and you think, oh, I do want to share something on that first question or any question as we move forward, just select the number one. For those of you who are coming in and listening online, select the number one to make your question.
I just want to reiterate just what you said before about our, you know, how our fears manifest. And so, you know, no matter what, you know, when you're in that relationship, we will manifest our greatest fear. That's why, you know, the word tells us not to fear. You will manifest your greatest fear. Like she says, the only way you can love like you've never been loved is to forget what your past has taught you, forget what your past relationships have taught you. And no matter what, every last one of us, we have lived long enough to realize that we don't want to bring any type of past baggage into anything new. So the only way you can do that, you have to completely release those previous fears, those previous relationships, everything in it that ever happened, you have to release that. Otherwise, you cannot start one fresh and new. And your greatest fears will manifest simply because you have intensified focus and thought on, well, what if this person does this? And the only reason why you can even ask that question is because you're comparing, what if this person does what the last person did. So you have to wipe comparison out of it. You have to completely remove your fears out of it. And, yes, it is possible for it to happen, but not with fear and not with comparison. That will just, that's setting, you setting yourself up for failure before it even begins. And so that's just to finalize that and, you know, kind of reiterate and reaffirm what she just said. Just take those two out of the equation, please.
Okay. Well, our next question is, and again, if you all have anything you want to share on that one, don't think about the order. Don't worry about us being in order or going in order. We can always come back to that question if you have some comments. This one is, and I don't know if you all feel this way, but I feel like people are really, really angry today. And I'm going to go ahead and just connect the second question with this one because I think it ties into this. But the first one that I had is, why are people so angry and why are people so unhappy, seemingly? And my answer for the angry, people seeming to be just so angry and disconnected, is I think that we're living for someone else. We're living someone else's dream. We're living a lie, so to speak. And we talked about this when we did the CEO to the Power of You and probably many other shows as well. But we talked about how people are one way at church, one way at work, one way at home, one way when they're with this friend, one way when they're with that, you know, this other friend, and so forth. So much so is we are just confused about who we really are and what who we need to be at what time and with whom. And I think that has a lot to do with just confusion and disappointment within ourselves and toward ourselves. That goes right into being unhappy. I mean, it's that's a lot to keep up with. And I think you can play the game for so long, but I think it comes a time when you just have to say, I really don't care who you want me to be. I'm going to have to find out who I am and work to either change or better that person, or just some self-identity, some self-discovery is what I call it. That's the best thing that you can do for yourself. Stop dancing to someone else's music and someone else's drum beats and just find out who you are. And if part of it that you don't like, what do you do about it? But don't try to hide it and suppress it, because I think that's when you just realize I can't function. I can't get up day to day. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. You know, I'm trying to be Superwoman and Superman and just I don't know who I am anymore. I don't know who to be anymore. So that kind of ties in. And we have a caller. I'm going to check this caller just to see, Tika, before bringing you on that question. Let me check here. 615 area code, last 46722. Caller, do you have a comment or a question?
I have a comment on that question. How are you ladies today before I start? The second one. So why are people so angry, so mad? I feel like in today's society, people tend to be that way because either, one, they haven't found themselves, so they really don't know which vibe to go off of, versus, like, you know you're going to go in and you're going to have a positive day, you know you're going to get off work and you're going to be relaxed and be stress-free. It's because people haven't truly, like, sat down, meditate to get to know who they are inside before, you know, they start loving somebody else or, you know, going off into the deep end where they're just like, I can't take this anymore. And then when they do go off into the deep end and they realize this, they're just like, I'm starting to find myself. And I know my friends, they would ask me, like, sometimes, like, Stacey, why are you so happy? And during that time, I would say, because I'm giving me some me time, and that's why I feel like it's better if you were to give yourself some me time and truly love yourself, then you can love others the way you want to be loved. Truly,
I so agree, particularly with that me time. I find that so many, and I'm just gonna speak for women. So many women, there's so much you're missing out on, even if you don't have a girlfriend to go with you, you know, because a lot of times women don't want to get out and do things that are just okay. Sometimes with doing it by yourself, go to a movie by yourself. We've said that on the show. Go eat dinner by yourself. That is just so refreshing. It's like, yes, the company is nice, but if you sit around and wait on someone to entertain you or to get you in the mood to entertain yourself, you might just be waiting forever. Get out and explore new people, because unfortunately it's hard to find. I found that women will do more. I think they'll sit around more and do less, just kind of waiting on that. I'm gonna say it, waiting on that man to come and just sweep them off their feet and make their life complete. And it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. So that me time, Stacey, is just for everybody, but women, because we try to be superwomen, we try to do this and do that and be perfect in the eyes of everyone and everybody, and it takes a toll. The older you get and you realize, I can't do this. There's no way I can continue to keep this up and be sane. So you just have to let people go. And as you change and find yourself, everything seems to change about you. It's like you sometimes don't know who you are. And I think that's why once you start to change, you start to see your circle of people start to change, because your interests in things start to change what you want to do and places you want to go and just many things start to change when you really, really learn to love yourself and find out who you're loving, who are you, what makes you you. So I agree, Stacey. Great, great comment. Tika, you have anything?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I think one of the reasons that people can tend to be angry and live a life filled with unhappiness is I believe a lot of it could be unlived passions or the things that they've hoped for that they have not been able to recognize they haven't come to pass, the things they've hoped for, the things in their childhood that they hoped for, some of those desires, they've grown up and they've just put them on the back burner and they've just never come to pass. Everything has taken first place and it's taken, you know, those things have taken second place, third place, and they've wound up all the way on list number 25, but they have never, you know, there's never time for them to do them, and they just see the clock ticking, and they see themselves getting older, and I didn't do what I said I was going to do. I didn't do what I wanted to do. I didn't do what, you know, I dreamed of doing, and I'm just sitting here doing the day in, day out, clocking in, clocking out, living this life, feeling like a robot or just a piece of society where basically I'm just going with the flow, just going with the flow, just going with the times, and I'm not... You know, I'm not what I wanted to become, and I'm totally not where I wanted to be. So I think that can set up a whole lot of resentment, you know, pent in, built up resentment, that the outer reflection of that is anger, and people will see that as unhappiness. But that unhappiness is so, you know, embedded inside that it's hard to shake that. And I think also we tend to attract that since our inside energy is so angry and we're filled with unhappiness, we tend to almost gravitate towards other people who are that way as well. And so it just becomes a bunch of people, a group of people feeling that heaviness and feeling that uneasiness. And almost like the other people become almost like a cheerleader for you, a cheerleader in justifying why it's okay for you to feel the way you do, but not a cheerleader in telling you that it's never too late. So I think that could be some of the reasons that unhappiness and anger tends to be on the faces and in the minds of so many people today.
Okay. And I've been hearing that. I think, you know, it makes me think about just feeling purposeless. I think we have those gifts in us, that things that we feel drawn to, those things that we kind of say we would do for free if we had the opportunity to do them. And I think once you tap into who you are and do some self-discovery, those things tend to just manifest more deeply, and you want to get them out to the point where you do have some resentment start to set in, and you start to blame, I think, in many cases, other people. You know, that I didn't make this happen because I put, like Tika said, put this person first, this thing first, and you find yourself at a point where you start to feel like it's too late. But as we've said on the show, it's never, ever, ever too late. If you wake up on this side of the dirt today, you have a second chance.
That's right.
To start. You have a chance to start over. It's kind of like when I was sharing that I heard a pastor say, you know, someone was saying, you know, I should have went to school, I should have, you know, went to college, and 4 years later they're saying the same thing, when you can just make a commitment and do what's needed to go to school, and for those 4 years later you could have had your college degree. So if that's your thing and that's what you want to do, start now, start today. But you have to start in order to get there. And if you're not willing to start, then just don't bring it back up. 4 years from now, don't bring it back up unless you're bringing it back up when you're signing those enrollment papers.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just sets up bitterness. So, Stacey, I hope we didn't take away from your comment or question, but that was a great comment. You have anything else to share?
No, ma'am, that was it.
All right, well, feel free to, we have many more questions, so if one strikes you again, feel free to reselect the button, okay?
I will. Okay, we'll go to the next question. Oh, thank you, Stacey.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And before the next question, a little food for thought. One way to move beyond those feelings, if you could remove the word should and shouldn't have. I should have done this, I shouldn't have done this. If you can just remove, gradually begin to remove the word should from your vocabulary. And it may not be something that you can do on your own, but find someone that can help point it out to you. There's some things that I recognize that I do. I sometimes get my girls to remind me. If you hear mommy do this, tell me when I do it, because I won't always pick up on it because it's such a continuous habit. We, certain words that we say, they're so habitual that we don't realize that we say them all the time. But there's power in our words, and we don't realize how much our words can defeat us. And so there's times I tell my girls, if you hear me say this, let me know. And when they let me know, it stings, but I ask them to point it out to me because you cannot change anything that you're unaware of. And so those are one of the two words that I try my best to remove from my vocabulary, should and shouldn't have, because I'll always say what I should have done or I'll always say what I shouldn't have done. And then that'll just, you know, just set that domino effect up in your mind to just start, you know, blaming yourself or regretting or resenting. It sets that pattern up. And so that's just a little food for thought.
And if you find yourself asking yourself those questions or feeling that way, especially if I should have, then ask yourself, if I should have, can I now? Do I have an opportunity? Like you said, when you wake up today, if you still feel that drawing towards something that you wish you should have done, then say, can I make this possible now, and how do I start? And that will eliminate a lot of anger and unhappiness and blaming other people for where you are in your life, and it will eliminate many things. So find yourself on the shoulda, woulda, coulda. Just, you know, ask yourself, what can I do about the shoulda, woulda, coulda today? And do I still, you know, is that something still that I want to even do? Because sometimes I think we beat ourselves up over things that we've long passed. It just is something else to get us through the day so that we don't have to address those real issues. Some things we fuss about, we couldn't do this or can't do this, when deep down you don't want to do them, it's just a way for you to blame other people about circumstances and situations. So let's see here. This one, and I have a few questions that I call throw-in questions, because I don't want anybody to feel like they have to answer these questions, but I think it's kind of like Tika said, food for thought, and make you think later after the show, perhaps. But this is one: what is your happiest childhood memory? What makes it so special? So, what is your happiest childhood memory, and what makes it so special? This one was interesting to me, and I called it a throw-in because, and I don't want to, you know, anybody to misinterpret this, but I had to think, like, really long and hard, like, okay, what would have been my happiest childhood memory and why? But I flipped it, and I thought, okay, what was my saddest childhood memory? And I remembered that one right away. Didn't have to think twice. So it was interesting to me that, you know, how we keep. So if anybody wants to share, you certainly can. But I kind of call that one a throw-in question, that kind of food for thought. What was your happiest childhood memory, and what makes it so special? And if you can't remember, then start thinking, you know, what was it? And hopefully you'll have one or two or three, which I do as well. But it's just, you really have to think about what made it so happy. What was it, and why was it so special? So I think when we can tune our mind to start thinking in that direction, we will be on the right track. Like, daily, think about what makes us happy, what works for us, keeps us away from the negative. So if anybody want to give that question a shot, feel free to do so. Tika, you got anything on that one?
No, not on that one. I guess I, when I saw that one, I said, well, I have to think about it. But that should be an instant thing that comes to my mind.
Yeah, but I wondered, did anybody, and even if you guys that are listening, if you couldn't think of your happiest, but when I reversed it and mentioned what was your saddest, if you were able to think about that one, if just select number one and say, yes, I did not know where to go with the happiest, but when you said the saddest, my mind took me back to that moment. And again, that you don't have to say what that is, but that's just an indication of where we stay in our minds. It's kind of like the trash can, and hopefully some of you move your trash can we go back to where it was. We're so routine. And we go back to those things that have affected us the most. So just interesting. It was interesting for me. Okay, let's see. Here's a good one. What or who do you love? So I said what or who, and remember you can be as discreet here as you want to be for those of you who do come in, and have your recent actions openly expressed this love. Okay, and this goes, my answer actually went back to kind of what our first caller, Stacy, mentioned. For me, I put me time, that I just love me time. I just love, and I say one day I'm going to really, really regret that because I'm probably going to find myself alone, but I'm just saying probably. I'm not going to own up to that. But me time, I love going to the park. Sonic has become my best friend, so to speak. I park and do the happy hour drinks and just have some good old me time. But just that good me time, going to eat, going to the movies, so much so till I'm just okay with it now, okay with it. So if anybody wants to answer, share any of that. So again, it's what or who do you love, and have your recent actions express this love. So the lines are open, Tika. Do you have any?
Moving right along.
You guys are too quiet. You're going to make me answer these questions all by myself. Here's one. Why do you think we are so afraid to make a mistake or mistakes? Why do you feel, or are you, why do you feel that we are afraid to make a mistake? And do you feel like we, I'm going to add to this question, I think it's a good one. Do you feel like we don't do a number of things or a great many of things because we're afraid to make a mistake? And that being said, why, particularly if the word is that the best way to learn is from a mistake. So why are we so afraid to make them? For instance, as our first question was about loving like you've basically never been hurt, basically, you know, if we went into those relationships, those serious relationships, with not being afraid that it's not going to work, do you think it would have a better chance of working? Or do you think because you're afraid that it's not going to work, like making a mistake and it's not going to work, that it kind of sets the tone and sets that gives out that negative energy? So if you are afraid of making a mistake, and a lot of us don't realize we are, but that comes with fear. And a lot is in that one question because it has a lot to do with fear as well, and how, also question one and two, how we want people to see us, how we try to be everything else for everybody. So I think that has a lot to do with that one as well. The lines are open if anybody wants to jump in on, again, not on just the question that we're on, but if you have anything on any of the questions. So let's see. Let me go to another one. Tika, do you have any of yours ready, available? If not, I'll keep going with some.
I wanted to, it's kind of partly on what the question that you just asked. One of my questions was, why is it so hard for us to have faith in a future that's different, opposite, or greater than our past? And the reason that is, and it's kind of, you know, tied into the question you just asked, being afraid to make a mistake. And so, just like Tammy said, mistakes teach you. Our past teaches us, and it depends on what has taken place in our past. It depends on how we receive the information, how we allowed it to teach us, if we thought that it taught us only do not do this, do not do this, or if I do this, I'll, you know, this cause will equal this effect, and so I'm just going to do this another way, or I'm just going to rearrange some things. And allowing our past to teach us, that's to me exactly what this question is asking. Why is it so hard to have faith in a future that's different, opposite, or greater than our past? And something that's super extremely simple to me is, if I were to hand you a spoon, how do you know what to do with that spoon? As simple as a spoon is, if I hand it to you, everybody knows what to do with a spoon. But a person who's never, ever, ever seen one, if I hand it to them, they won't know what to do with it. But the people who do know what to do with it, they know what to do with it because they learned in their past. Their past taught them, someone showed them what to do, someone showed them how to use it. They watched someone in their past. It's all connected to the past, and that taught you how to do this one thing. So you know what this object is. You know what to do with this object. You know how to use it. You know how to clean it based on what your past has taught you. And our past teaches us every single thing we've learned up until this day and stage of our lives right now. If something has burned you, You know not to touch that cigarette. You know not to touch that fire. When you tell a baby, don't touch the fire, don't put the finger in the fire, and when they see that you're not looking, they reach over to touch it. Once it burns them, you won't see them sneak behind your back and try to touch that fire again. So everything in our past has taught us what not to do, what not to repeat. Or if you repeat this, this is what you will reap from it. And so we don't have to look at our past as being a fearful thing, or we don't have to look at why, okay, if I do this, I'm just going to make a mistake. I do this, I'm just going to make a mistake. That will just create paralysis in you. You will not move forward if you're so afraid of making a mistake. And you're going to constantly have programmed in your head, well, I'm going to make a mistake because when I did this, that was a mistake. When I did this, that was a mistake. Don't see it as a mistake. Just see it as something that you learned, and you have to change your learning process, or you have to change how you're going to do it. Whatever you call it, if that's what you call it in your mind, that's what you're constantly going to see yourself as doing, making mistakes. But call it something different. I'm pretty sure you can find another name to call that situation or that circumstance or that relationship. Every single thing is not a mistake. And so it's hard to have faith in a future that's opposite, in a future that's greater, or in a future that is, what I say, different, opposite, or greater. It's hard to even have faith in that if our faith is tied to every wrong thing we did in our past. And so that's just the question I wanted to ask Tammy. Why is it so hard to have faith in a future different, opposite, or greater than our past?
Okay, so why is it so hard to have faith in a future that's opposite or greater than our past, so to speak? Mm-hmm. So why are we afraid to step into the future?
Hoping for something better. You hope for something better, but even though you hope for something better, in the same sentence, you're telling yourself, "But I won't receive anything greater." So you can't hope for to have faith in it because you've already told yourself you couldn't have it or couldn't receive it or couldn't. It wouldn't ever manifest. So it's like just setting up failure.
I think sometimes people feel really. A lot of people won't admit to this, but I think for the most part we feel undeserving. I think we allow whatever we've done in the past, the things that God tells us we're forgiven for, we bring all that forefront, and I think in most cases we don't feel like we are worthy of God's grace, God's mercy, God's promises. And so we set up this barrier even with God. I really think that is a topic to be talked about because I think so many people are living in the past. You know, we talked about let it go until you feel like I can't stand before God with all this, you know. But again, the church is full, you know, see posts on Facebook, so much stuff on Facebook, but I don't think people are really dealing with the core. I think we're all just still very broken, and we're not dealing with the core. So I just think we feel unworthy. And so how do you step into that greatness? How do you step into those promises when you feel like, I don't deserve them, Lord? I don't. You feel undeserving of them. Not that you are, but you feel that you are because you have all that stuff right there on the front line. You bought it all on the front line. It's like you left your fire, your gun, left everything that you need for the battle behind you. You bought all that stuff that you need to just let go and move forward from. So that's my answer to that. You guys feel free to jump in. That was a great question. So nobody. I'm going to check that. We did have a comment on the chat line, so I'm going to get that one in. And it was going back to the question about your happiest childhood memory. And I asked this person, were they able to think of the answer right away or if it took some time. But it says, he says, my happiest memory ever was when my grandmother worked 70 hours a week, showed up to my state championship. I shot the ball every time I got the ball. So that's and so for the for Skyview, if you'll tell us, were you able to? Did you just know that right away, or was it something you had to think about before you know putting it out there? So that's from our chat line. I have one, and this is kind of it's a question and a comment, I guess I should say. Some people really are the living dead, I'm going to say that to start. But the question is, what is the difference between being alive and truly living? What is the difference, you think, between being alive and truly living? And this one was interesting to me as well, because I think because I feel like many people are just the walking or the living dead, that they're not experiencing life. There's no joy. They're just waking up, doing their everyday routine, and waiting to die. Like every dream they've had, they feel like I cannot make it happen now. It's too late. What we mentioned tonight as well. But so, what do you think the difference is between being alive, just breathing, existing, and truly living? And again, some of my answers was basically, again, I think people are just kind of existing, and they've put, like Tika said earlier, they put themselves on the back burner so much so until they don't know who they are, who to give what. It's like, whose turn is it now? It's everybody's turn except your own. And this made me think about a post, and I don't know where this post came from or this quote came from. I got it off my son's page, but he didn't put who actually quoted it. And it says, learn to love life before looking for the love of your life. Learn to love yourself, then others, then love others as you love yourself. Surely this is the road to spiritual wealth. So again, learn to love life before looking for the love of your life, which I think is important. And then learn to love yourself and then love others as you love yourself. And this is surely the road to spiritual wealth. And I think even in loving ourselves, if you don't love yourself, how can you think you're worthy of God's love? Again, it goes right back to the other question. Sometimes we don't think we're worthy of where God can take us, where that relationship with God can take us. And we just try to be perfect, and sometimes you just need to say what you mean and mean what you say and do what you say. So anybody want to tackle that one? What is the difference between being alive and truly living? And if you all are not answering, I hope you're writing these down and think about these. Because they are some good questions. They definitely made me think.
They are.
Do anything that one?
And it is, Tammy, it is. One is just, like you said, merely existing. You just, you know, you just wake up every day, you get up, you go to work, you clock in, you do your work, you come home, you get ready for bed, you get ready for the next day, and you just go and do it and start all over again the next day, feeling like just a part of the rat race, like a guinea pig in a spinning that wheel, just going nowhere. You're moving, but you're going nowhere. I think, to me, my personal opinion is, one life with God and one life without. The one without him is just, I just exist. I just get up and breathe every day, and I don't have anything to look forward to. I don't have faith in anything. I don't have hope in anything. I'm just here, going through the day in, day out monotony of life, versus the one with God. The one with God keeps me hoping, or even if I'm in an area of life to where I may not like it, but I can constantly know with surety that this is temporary. Knowing that this is temporary is simply because there are promises that he's placed in his word, and I believe that I'm a part that can receive those promises. So I have something greater to look forward to. I have something to reach after, because if I don't have something to reach after, to look forward to, or to hope for, I'd be dead. I'd be the walking dead. And that's what that's the difference for me.
Okay. I have one. I'm going to try to liven this up a little bit. I think we're getting too deep for you all. This is one that I really want to know the answer to. Tattoos. What are your thoughts? And somebody please answer this one for me. What are your thoughts? Why do you think so many people, particularly women, find the need to or find it intriguing to get tattoos? And I'm going to say tattoos because I'm seeing just huge tattoos on places that you cannot hide ever, not even sometimes in a job. And then knowing that jobs will, I remember years ago working with someone who had a very small, cute tattoo, nothing, you know, just very small, cute tattoo on the arm. But even in the summertime, this person had to wear sleeves because the our employer did not welcome tattoos. And so, I mean, this person would have to come to work in the summertime with sleeves while we were all in our little, you know, summer tops or whatever. But I'm just finding this trend that it just keeps going. And that's your thing. I'm just curious because I'm thinking about going in, sitting in someone's chair, and them needling me up for hours, drawing on me, I guess is what I'm looking at, like drawing a picture on me that I cannot take off. Like it's permanently there. And it's not just a small picture. It's this huge picture that is going to cause me so much pain. And I remember one time doing some research on that because I just thought it has to be something. It has to be something to this. And whatever it is, I'm missing it. But what is it? Do you have any thoughts? Do you have tattoos? Do you want more? And if so, is it addictive? What are you getting from it? Or is it just artsy? You know, what is it? So I would love to hear that. Keep that question out there and share. So moving right along, I don't have an answer for that one, but I'd love to hear yours.
I want to say something about the tattoos.
Okay.
I remember being young and just, you know, talking about wanting a tattoo. And I remember my grandmother telling me, you know, she was completely against tattoos. And I, you know, said, why can't I have a tattoo? You know, it's my body. And I remember her saying to me, you would be, you know, you would desecrate your body by marking it up because your body is your temple. And when you're young, you don't understand that. And I'm thinking, it's my body, it's my arm, it's my legs. And I see some tattoos as being, you know, from some very gifted artists, and I see some, you know, that are really, you know, nice forms of art. And then I see some that, some tend to look like a person let their friend practice on them or learn on them. But one thing I noticed, I am starting to see more tattoo-filled people in the workforce, but it is certain jobs that they qualify for or will, you know, certain jobs accepted as well. I know I don't believe the corporate world is still too open-minded in letting people, you know, feel with them. But it is kind of a concern to me. Just personally, when I would see people completely filled with tattoos, I mean almost head to toe to where there's barely any area on their body uncovered, I always wondered if it's their way of saying that this is my body and I can do with it what I want to do. The world can tell me, you know, or somebody can tell me where I can work or what I can do or this or that, but you cannot tell. I can mark my body up any way I please. You may tell me I got to wear my hair this way. I can't put this color in my hair. I got to wear this type of slacks. I got to wear a button-down shirt, but I can do to my body whatever I want. And I almost wonder if it's a form of this is mine. I can completely tear it up. I can scribble all over it. But what will you do? So I always wonder what is the mindset that stands behind. I've never really asked a person that I see fully covered in one because that's a personal thing and you just never know the response that you're going to get. But I've seen a couple of people heavily covered and I've wanted to ask them.
Okay.
Their reasons for that.
Okay. Well, we had a comment on the chat line and I'm going to check real quick here the lines to see if we have one on the phones first. Okay, we don't. On the chat, we have a comment, and I went back on this one, but this person says that they saw a 60-ish age woman at church on Sunday with a tattoo on her left breast. Now, my question was, how were you able to see this on the left breast at church? Well, we probably know the answer to that. And he says she had it showing. So, example of why not to get one. But, I mean, just the overall thing is just seems out of order to me. But that was our comment there. So again, some of you may have tattoos. Some of you may be thinking about getting tattoos. I would forever like to know the answer or just some comments. And I've had some conversation with some people, some that have had them done on their body and they want to get them off now. And so maybe I need to ask, where are you now that makes you want to remove them, particularly if they're huge? I mean, I've seen some, like, a woman's entire arm. Like, where do you go from that? Where do you go from your entire arm being tattooed and the only way off is surgery, really? I mean, a major procedure, I guess I shouldn't say surgery. I don't really know if that's true, the surgery.
Removal procedure, yeah, and that takes several visits to get that off. And I've heard people say that they're addicting, and I did get a tattoo when I was in my early 20s. I got a small tattoo, and it's because I wanted to get a small one to see, you know, how it would look over time. Is it going to look good? Is it going to look bad? Because I really wanted a bigger one up my back. I was infatuated with panthers, and I wanted a panther climbing up my back. But I'm so glad that I got a small one because I was able to see in a year's time the discoloration went from black to a funny bluish, palish, ugly color. And it made me see that if I put something big and black on my back, it's going to be an ugly color, and I'm not going to consistently go and get it redone and, you know, where they have to put more ink into it to make it dark. I didn't want to constantly do that. And so I kind of stopped at one because I didn't like the discoloration, and I've been told by several people, oh, yeah, they're going to fade. You just got to go and get them darkened. So that was the one thing that kept me from going back. But it's in an inconspicuous place that no matter what, it'll always be covered up. I didn't want to put it in a place to where, just in case I didn't like it, I wouldn't have to worry about, you know, removing it. So that wound up being my ordeal with the tattoos. And since I'm so in love with butterflies now, I want to get a butterfly, but of course I've had Tammy tell me, you know, don't even think about it with being the age I am now. But it's still something I think about. But I'm going to think long and hard on it before I just jump into it.
Okay. Well, we'll see. All right, I have one. And ladies, this is for you. And men, maybe you can comment on this as well. But why do women seem to lose their identity when they meet a man? Why do you think women feel it's necessary to do so? And then it has men. What are your thoughts? So, come on, ladies. Why do you see women to lose their identity, which I thought was very powerful? I got that one today. Why do women seem to lose their identity when they meet a man? And this person took it a little bit further as well in saying that not only do they lose their identity, they disconnect from their friends as well. They have no time for their friends. Their life is kind of just everything that man wants to be. They seem to take it on and become that person as well. So I want to hear from you all on that one. I think it's insecurity. I think it is, again, not knowing who you are, not loving yourself enough to say, hey, this is who I am. I think women will do that in many cases also to get the man, to get the relationship or whatever, and then once they feel I've conquered, I have this relationship, now I can go back and just do me, you know, be me. And then the man is like, well, who are you? Who are you? Have I been dating you? You know, because now you want to do your own thing. You don't want to do what you've been doing, so to speak. And men, if you've had that situation where you see, because I think it's at some point it becomes very apparent that this person has just kind of moved into your life. And again, nothing against supporting and you know, taking on some interest that this person has, but not to the point where you lose yourself and even friends. You just disconnect totally, you know. So anything on that, ladies? We have a lot of you out there, 770-678-901. So I'm going to go to the chat on that one and see if I have anything. Tika? I'm sure you have a
lot of
that.
No, that's a good one, because a lot of women, they do lose their identity. And, you know, I don't even know if some realize that they're doing it, because they're catering so much to the man. And not only do they, you know, withdraw and you know, pull away from friends, but they pull away from family as well. It's like they are just incognito all the time. You never see them. You never hear from them anymore. They just disappear. But the only thing that truly concerns me is, if this relationship doesn't work, where does it leave you? Because you've pulled away from family, pulled away from friends.
Right. I think it takes that person right back to bitterness. And as a man, I would like to hear from the men. What do you – I mean, I wouldn't want a man that is at my beck and call.
Everything from
me. I mean, it just would not work for me, and I wouldn't want you around me 24/7. I just could not take that. You need to have some interest that you're only interested in, and I need to have something that only interests me, and we can just talk about it later and see how it all went. But some women do lose their identity. They just become the man. Whatever. And there's a difference between support and just totally losing yourself. And it happens, I think, on the other side as well. But this was the question that I received. It was more about the women, was the question that I received. So anybody want to share anything on that? Again, just select the number one.
We have no feedback from...
No, I thought that would have got the women going.
Tonight?
For sure.
Yeah.
Maybe it's that they're questioning, thinking about, have they, you know, is this part of their world? So I'm going to move to another question, and I have many of them, and I won't keep going because we're not going to keep you all really, really long tonight. Maybe we'll just throw some of these in at a later time. Okay, who can bring out the worst in you? And you don't have to answer this online, but think about it. Who can bring out the worst in you? And you may even want to say why. Why can this person bring out the worst in you? What I've found in this, and you all may or may not agree, but sometimes the person that can bring out the worst in you is the person that you absolutely love the most. And I wish I knew why.
No.
It's kind of like, I had a question here, why do people... Why is it such a thin line between love and hate? And this question was one of mine. It kind of came up because I recently had the opportunity to kind of sit through something that just left me looking like, how does this happen? How do two people that vow to love each other, that you know, make babies together, how does it get to this point where they absolutely almost hate each other, like totally? And this has happened several times, but I think that sometimes the person that can bring out the worst in us, that we allow to, is sometimes the person that we love the most, because we have such, or we think we do, we create these false expectations of them and wants and needs from them sometimes that they don't even know about. And then you put that anger out towards them because you're expecting them to read your mind and know what you want, when you want it, and how you want it, rather than you just saying, this is what I want, when, and how, and then talking about it if it does not match what that person can give you. So the question out there, and the lines are open. I'm going to pick up. You got anything on that one? I'm going to go to the chat.
Well, yeah, that one's, and that person that can rub you in the worst way. And usually... that thin line between love and hate, I remember when I didn't understand that topic, and then I was able to see how you can love somebody so much, but when that relationship turns sour with the person that you used to love so much, you will hate them just as strongly as you love them. And I've seen that, I guess, most prevalent in marriage relationships, marital unions, to where, you know, once upon a time you loved one another, you had children together, you know, you were doing your family and your life together, and something great, great caused this to go in a total opposite direction, and next thing you know, you wind up in the courtroom, and both parties and their attorneys are in the courtroom, you know, trying their best to deface one another's character as much as possible. And the worst the it gets worse and worse and worse because each one is trying to hurt the other one, and that hurt turns to an elevated form of hatred. And I've been in that boat somewhat, but then I also realized that the person who rubs me the wrong way and the person that I hate, when I wind up just, you know, reading through my process of healing, I wind up realizing that that person is not going anywhere because they will be used to grow out of me. Whatever it is that's creating this strong form of hatred or whatever it is, it just makes my blood boil when I hear their voice or when they say anything, you know, just no matter what, when that person says something, anybody else could say it and you okay. But then when this person say, yo, blood pressure shoots from 0 to 500. And so it's to work that out of you. It's truly to work that out of you because they're not going anywhere until that situation gets worked out of you. And once they can't push all your buttons and send you from 0 to 500 anymore, you move on or you kind of go separate ways. But that whole love-hate thing is that's kind of scary because you don't realize how much you can hate a person that you used to love. It sounds really crazy, but it is so true.
It is. Made me think about this article that I just pulled out. And this is a great site for women and men because it's Proverbs 31 Ministries, but they send this daily word on a daily basis. And one that came over was when aggravation accumulates. And I think a lot of times because we love someone, we allow things to just – we look over things rather than addressing them immediately, so to speak. We kind of let things go and they build up. And then – once the pot is boiling over, you are responding, you are reacting to not just that, but to everything that you've allowed to build up to that point that you can remember, mm-hmm. and some things you've forgotten about, but emotionally you have internalized them. So I think that is something as well that we do with the people that we love the most is we allow them some passes. We allow them some free passes in our mind. We think. Mm-hmm. We think we're going to let this one go, but you keep it. You internalize it. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to the point where you're just like, I'm sick of this, and I feel like you're just walking over me and using me, then you respond and react in a way that you probably shouldn't. And what this article said is accumulated aggravations equal accumulated impact. So it's kind of like you're riding around and, you know, can
it's
you
like
imagine?
A pressure cooker.
Yeah, you just blow up on that person that you really love and you've loved
and
them to
say, what did I do?
Right. And you feel bad because now you've hurt the one that you said something, did something that did not have to happen. So.
And it wasn't that one incident, it was the last 12 incidents.
Right, exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. Kind of like leaving the house angry and someone pulling, you know, we've used this scenario many times. You leave the house angry and already having a bad day and someone can just make a mistake and pull out in front of you, pull over in front of you, and they really didn't see you and really didn't mean it, but you let them have it. And it's not really about them pulling over in front of you. It's that you were already at that moment. You were just waiting for someone to do something. You were waiting for the light to turn red to make you mad. So that reminded me of that. So, Tika, you want to share some of your questions?
I have a question that it's kind of a two-part question, and I can only ask it from my part as being a woman because I've always wondered if men do this too, but I don't know how to answer it in a man's way. But my question is, does the thought of waiting make you feel as if the right mate will never come? And then tied to that, why do so many women settle? And I can't ask the question as why do men settle because I don't know if there's a high percentage of men settling, but I do know of a pretty great percentage of women settling. But the question being, does the thought of waiting make you feel as if the right mate will never come?
So waiting, Tika, when you're saying waiting
when you rush into anything, of course it's not going to be what you want. It may look like it, but, you know, a lot of times we find out in the end, oh, this is not what I wanted. And then when you realize it's not what I wanted, then another form kind of takes over and you decide, well, I'm just going to settle.
If I may, let me ask you this. When you say waiting, what Because I think there's so many definitions of waiting. What are you doing while you're waiting?
If you're waiting and single, if you're waiting, if you're single, right. If you're waiting, not waiting and sitting in the house eating bonbons and with the remote in your hand, not waiting in that amount. Of course, waiting and being out in environments that, you know, social environments, you know, to where you're out in social environments, not just church, but out in social gatherings to where, you know, you're meeting other professionals or other people on, you know, the level or the areas of life that you want to go, you know, getting yourself out and about in social environments. And whether it's serving the community or, you know, volunteering or, you know, just being out in the social environment, but waiting. And the reason I say waiting, if you've already gone through past relationships that did not last, is the thought of, okay, well, I just got to find me another Band-Aid as soon as possible. Is that something that, you know, people don't want to call it a Band-Aid, but I tend to see that that's what it is when you really kind of rush into something without going through a true, to me, the waiting process is nothing more than a healing process. And so my question is, does the thought of waiting make you feel as if you won't find the right mate? Because people don't tend to wait. Once a relationship ends or once they get out of a relationship, it's almost as if it's a race to get into a new one.
Okay. Anybody on the line that has a comment to that? Great question. For me, I think, I think I look at waiting differently, and I've started to kind of look at people as, you know, I'm not waiting, not really looking either, but when you come across those people that you just like, I'm not waiting, it's just you're not the one. You know what I'm saying? You're not, you're just not it. You just wouldn't do it. But I understand what you're saying. Like, it makes you sometimes give up hope.
Yeah,
it makes you feel hopeless, like this person doesn't exist or there's nobody out there.
I don't mean waiting in a way to where you're looking at the calendar and you marked off, okay, here's another month I'm single, here's another month. You know, not in that form, of course, you know, not to that extreme. But waiting meaning that you know, 6 months have gone by, you know a year's gone by, you're not really counting, but even though you know that time has gone by, you know that that right person hasn't stepped into your life and it's not worth settling for, well, this is good enough. You know, we don't want any good enoughs in our lives.
I just want to say, well, when you get another Band-Aid and when you finally remove that Band-Aid, that sore is still there. Actually, it's grown bigger. So stay away from the Band-Aids. If I can say one thing, just stay away from the Band-Aids because they don't heal the sore. They don't come with Neosporin. They don't heal it from the inside. So, okay, well, you guys are really quiet, so what I'd like to do, you can just kind of throw these questions out there to them, and they can we'll go ahead and end it.
Okay.
Hopefully we have you all some ideas.
Food for thought, yes.
To ponder on, and exactly, food for thought. And I had lots more, but I don't want to, you know, go through all of these. I think we probably put enough on your mind tonight, at least enough to give you some thought process for the remainder of the week. So, that being said, I'm going to, there's just a few that I did want to get in, and I'm going to ask those and leave you, maybe I did. The one that I did not get to, we talked a little bit about, and I wanted to share an article with you, we kind of talked about, and it was the one that, the thin line between love and hate. I mean, that is just so interesting to me, so intriguing that we sometimes end up just really hating the one that we loved the very most, I should say. So that's one that I really wished we had gotten more time to discuss. But I'm gonna leave you with some of these, and these are kind of some ones that you just want to call some throw-ins. If life is short, why do we do so many things we don't like, and like so many things that we don't do? So if life, we probably could end the show with that.
Well, that's a
if
show.
Life is so short,
that's another show.
Why do we do so many things we don't like, and like so many things that we don't do?
That's good.
That's a really powerful one. What is the one thing you'd most like to change about the world? If you just had one thing, what would it be? Another good one, to what degree have you actually controlled the course your life has taken? So to what degree are you responsible? Have you controlled the course your life has taken? Another one, and this is just food for thought. Take it with you and ponder on it. Are you more worried about doing things right or doing the right things? Okay, so that's a good one as well. If you could offer a newborn child, whether it be your child or someone else's child, only one piece of advice, what would it be and why? Another one, what one thing have you not done that you really want to do? And I really love this, what's holding you back, because that's a butterfly evolution phrase. So what one thing have you not done that you really want to do? And what's holding you back? And if you can't think of that one thing, you really need to answer all these questions tonight and start doing some soul searching. Let me pick out another good one here that I had. What are you most grateful for? What are you most grateful for? I think I want to answer that one. I used to say becoming a mom, and I still am, but it is really stepping into Tammy, really finding out who I am, what makes me me, what irks me, what makes me happy, what doesn't do it for me, what I need to stop doing, what I need to do better. So it's just self-discovery, just really letting go and saying, you know what, like we said earlier, I can't be all this for all you people, because you'll let me be all this and take me to my grave. So what are you most grateful for? And my answer is just self-discovery, loving me. Again, if you don't love yourself, you're unable to receive love consistently, even God's love. So good one to think about. Let's see. I think we've given you enough. Tika, you have some fatal ones for them, some ones that will make them hang up?
No, just other than the, no, nothing to add to the ones that I've brought on. Yeah, they got a whole lot to think on.
Okay, so hopefully these questions have helped you and will make you think more about life and self-discovery. And, you know, it's good to kind of take these questions and get together as a group and just start, you know, answering them. I really like the one, you know, what's the difference between being alive and truly living? So make sure that you are truly living and truly are living according to who you are and not someone else's drum beats or music or who they want you to be and how they want you to be and when they want you to be it. Because that's when you lose yourself and lose every part of you, every part of your being you lose. So thank you all for tuning in to tonight's show. We hope, again, that you will take some things away from the show and add, and it brings, you know, things to your life that you can use and benefit from. We will not air next Monday in honor of the holiday. So we're going to, Tika and I are going to take a break and just come back just that much stronger. So we will not air on Labor Day, which is next Monday. You guys take the time to be with your family and we just thank you for listening and tuning in to the Butterfly Evolution Show each Monday night. And Tika, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay. I just want to leave tonight with the one question that I asked earlier, because this is one that I want to kind of leave on your minds as well. Why is it so hard for us to have faith in a future different, opposite, or greater than that of our past? And I just want to leave you with the scripture of 2 Corinthians 5:7, which says, "For we walk by faith and not by sight." I want to leave our listeners with realizing that what you see before you, what you see with your earthbound eyes, the understanding that you have with your earthbound minds, this is not as good as it gets. This is not as great as it gets. Faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things unseen. So I want to leave you with knowing that in this transcendent reality, we can, something is greater. There is something greater to reach for, to hope for, to strive for. And it's not just in merely existing. It is not in the mundane day in, day out of reality of what you're seeing right now. But don't focus on what you see. just focus on what you know. And if you decide to choose to read His Word will show you all of His promises. And then you know that you are entitled to those promises because you are a child of the Most High. So just leaving you with that to ponder on. And we've enjoyed having you here tonight. And we will see you again in 2 weeks. God bless you all. Good night.